been single and messianic. Here in the messianic in our day, that it's very difficult because we don't have a culture. And we're going to talk about some myths about dating and courtship, and what is betrothal, what's dating, what's courtship. Yeah, dating and courtship. What's the difference? Both are experimental in nature. When you go dating, you know, you're basically putting your heart out there. And you don't have any safeguards except maybe a few things in your own mind, but your heart is still getting tied. It opens you both up to, you know, risk. You know, that risk is being scarred for life and giving away something that is, you know, something that's very, very precious. Something that you, once you give it away once, it can never be given away again. And because it's not, you know, it might not always work out when you're dating or you're courting. And it's, we're going to talk about some ways that, and some myths that people have in their mind about, you know, how courtship is safer than dating. But when it comes right down to it, it's not. And there is a better way. There is a safer way. It's biblical betrothal. Biblical betrothal, we'll look at some other things about it later, but basically biblical betrothal is, it would be that whenever the relationship begins at the heart level, it's already set in stone. If you look at, we'll look at the verse later, but once someone was betrothed, it was done. So you would be very careful going into betrothal, because if you backed out of betrothal, that's a divorce. If you look at what Joseph and Mary went through, The risks of biblical betrothal is that, you know, you have to be open to the rest of the community. You have to be able to listen and then be able to speak up and say, well, there is a problem in this person's life. There is a problem in this family, and that it has to be overcome. And if these aren't discussed before you open up the biblical betrothal and you basically say, or drink from the cup, or however each individual community wishes to do it, it's too late. And that's the heart tie. And that's the biggest risk of the biblical betrothal, because as you saw Joseph and Mary, you know, he was betrothed to her, and she was found with child, and he's like, okay, what do I do? It's a big risk. Who makes the rules? A lot of people have come up with rules about biblical betrothal. And it's, if you look in the old books, the Mishnah and the different writings, it's not very clear exactly how they did it, because it's very private. And at that time, when the Romans or any of the Babylonians were there, and you were betrothed, they would sometimes take and break that up. So it was safer for them to hide it. So unfortunately, we don't have a lot of history from ancient times. And that's sad, and that's why I hope that we're able to... That is not very big. I am very sorry about that. Can we turn the light off to make it bigger? Is that better? No.
Bring it up closer and bring in your margins. We don't have to put a texture there. That's closer.
Yeah.
That's pretty small.
It's tiny, though. It's the
projector's too small. Yeah. Not that much, but.
Back up. Keep going.
And over. A little bit too
far. Now move to your left.
We'll just leave it like that. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I think one of the big things is that each individual community and each set of parents and the children that are willing to do this difficult path of betrothal, they have to talk, you know, their parents have to talk, and the community has to talk. And if we're wanting this, you know, as we come together as communities, we have to say, okay, this is the way we do it. You know, as, you know, we as a family, we've had to tell people, okay, sorry, we don't do the courting. You know, we do it much different, and it's much more difficult because you have to be, sometimes you have to be rude. But that is to be, to protect my daughter's heart, to protect my son's heart, you know, that's what it has to be. And a lot of people, they think that men's hearts aren't as delicate as women's heart. Everyone's heart is the same. It's very delicate, like a teacup. If you drop a teacup and it breaks, you know, you can glue it back together, but it will never be the same. And so that's why it's important for people when they're young, before they've broken the teacup. So I think those are the risks, and that's how we can come up with the rules for this. And it has to be each individual family, because, you know, you can't make, we're so dispersed that we can't make a hard, fast rule because we don't have the history written down, which is sad. I'm sorry, hold on, Lois, please. The purposes and advantages of it is, you know, you're not going to break the teacup. If you start when you're young, or if you draw a line now in the sand, you're not going to, you know, put more chips in the cup, or, you know, ruin your heart, or, you know, have that pain of, you know, crying in your room. I mean, I'm a guy and I cried, you know. And that's the misconception. You know, people think that men's hearts aren't delicate. And that's very wrong and very, very devastating to people. We're going to go through some myths. And myth number one, boys and girls can just be friends. Doesn't work, you know. What happens is that, you know, we'll just be friends. But no, one of them is thinking, maybe. And then it gets deeper and deeper. Then y'all are just friends, but y'all are friends that stick out a lot. It's not safe, you know. The other person that you're talking with, that cup's getting shattered. You're taking something that doesn't belong to you. You're taking something that belongs to some other man, some other woman. And it's a big myth. Our myth number two. Courtship is safer and better than dating. We talked about that a second ago, about how, you know, some people say that courtship is safer. In one way it is, because you have parents watching, but when it comes right down to the heart issue, you know, that heart, it ties so quick, no matter who you are. And no matter how old or how young you are. And it's going to tie so quick. And this idea that courtship is safer than dating, yeah, you might not hold hands until you're 3 months down the road, but that heart is still just as broken. And you've already given away the most important thing. You know, that's the one thing that can never be given wholly again. Myth number four. Oh, we had to open too quick. Parents don't have any part in the decision on whether child wants what their child wants to marry. So we're going to look at Deuteronomy 7:3. Nor shall you make marriage with them, nor shall you give your daughters to them, nor take their daughters for your sons. So here it clearly says that, you know, the parents do have a role in the marriage process or in the betrothal process. Because who better knows you? Who's better watched you as you've grown up and walked through your life with you? They are the ones who saw you from before you saw, and they're the ones who care the most about you, even though it might not feel that way. When I was young, I did the wrong, so I have to. I don't have any room to talk. This is more to parents. When I was young, I messed up. I gave my heart away. We thought it was a safe way to do it, but it wasn't, you know. And I had to weep with my wife and say, I gave something away that was not mine. I stole from you. And it's a very serious, you know. I can't give that back to her. And I took something that didn't belong to me when I was young. I took a heart that was not mine. And stealing is very grave. Myth number 6. Open up. Once my child becomes involved with someone, my hands are tied. And that's one of the things that we need to realize, is that when we see red flags, when we are in the betrothal process, it's better to back out of a betrothal process. After you've tied the knot, and after you've drunk from the cup, after it is a betrothal, or if you're courting, or if you have a child that's courting, it's better to say, okay, we gotta stop the courting, because it's better to say, okay, let's stop and let's back up and let's go through this again and start the marriage out properly and on a firm foundation. We've known people that they've had children and they allow their children to, you know, slowly just be friends. And then it gets worse and worse until they're holding hands. And they don't think that they can say anything because they allowed the children to be friends. And just friends. And then it got more involved. But parents and each one of y'all, there's always a chance to say, okay, no, we can't go any further. We have to stop and back up. And go back to where we originally were. Parents don't really know who I am. They cannot help me make the decision on who would be compatible with me. I know when I was young, my mom and dad didn't understand me. But they do. They understand what's going on in your heart. And they do care about you. I think that, you know, with this, sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but they really do care. And they don't just want to torture us, even though sometimes it feels that way. Myth number 8. I like that bouncing. We talked about that. My parents don't have my best interest in mind. Yeah, they might not want you to be able to date or to court or to hang out with the people that you really want to, but they do care, as we talked about that already. Now, this is the big one. Myth number 9. I like that.
Sorry, I didn't preview it.
I told you should have. I'm a responsible adult and I can handle this decision by myself. One of the things that brought Grace and I together, and one of the only reasons that we are married, is that we brought the community into the decision. I talked to other people in the community. I talked to her parents. She talked to other people in the community, and she talked to my parents. We went to other people and said, hey, I'm thinking about this person to become locked into an agreement with them. Am I okay? Are they okay? Is what he's doing just a show? Is this who this person really is? So you have to bring other, I mean, it says in the Bible, a multitude of counselors, that's where safety is. You know, even if you, and you have to be careful, but make sure that they're not people that are younger or of the same age that you're only getting your counsel from, because you saw what happened to Solomon's grandson, son? Yeah, one of his children or grandchildren. Then the Lord God said, it is not good that man shall be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him. I really like this verse because there's two different things. One, God has put a God-shaped hole in us. So we have such a need for God that we can't walk through our lives without Him. And that's the base foundation. And then the other thing that he's put into us is a need for a helper. Not just the men, but the women also. Or not just the women, but the men also. Is that we need one another. We need a companion. And as it says that he made them male and female. He made us, he made man and woman to be one. So there's a deep yearning in all of us to have someone. And it's a God-given desire. God has put a desire in women to desire men. And God's put a desire in men to desire women. So it's a God-given desire. And the desire is... Okay, I'll just read this for the tape. The desire for a companion is God-given. But the thing is that if you allow that desire to just run away, or even for a moment to, you know, become friends or just friends, that's not where it's going to stay. That path is just so, that spiral is just so quick, and you're going to go down it. Each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, gives birth to death, brings forth death. Like I said, you know, that's a spiral down, and it's so quick. You know, you're just, and it, as we know, it starts out in the big group. You've got, you know, in messianic groups, we all of us young people like to hang out together. We play hacky sack. Well, that was a long time ago, but we used to play hacky sack, and we'd get in these big groups. And then, you know, you'd have like the one girl that you would hang out with and, you know, it would become closer and then y'all were just friends. But then it would go down and down and then people would start saying, okay, they're a couple and they're a couple. You know, that's where it starts. It starts in the big groups if you don't say, no, you know, I'm not going to be just friends and I won't hang out with you in big groups. I mean, I'll only hang out with you in big groups. And, you know, but it is important that we have friends and watch other people. So it is that, I'm not saying that you don't hang out in big groups or you don't talk to people, but what I am saying is that you have to put those guards in your heart. Everyone does. Because as it says here, you know, when it's fully conceived, it brings forth death. And that's what the end of, if we don't follow God's protection. 2 Corinthians 10:5. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. You know, that's what I'm talking about. You know, you've got to put those guards in. You've got to take captive of every little thought in your head. And it's so quick. It's so quick that we say, well, you know, I really like that person. And I found that it's much safer if you see someone that is a godly person, you say, I like that person. Correcting your thoughts. No, I like this attribute of that person. I want that attribute in a spouse. So you have to be very careful in your thought life, and you have to take every thought captive and say, no, I'm shutting that down. And it is a decision. It is a choice. Because we are new creatures, God has remade us in the image of His Son, that we have power over our flesh, and we do have the choice to say no to it, and to, as Paul says, beat our flesh into submission and take every thought captive. What does this look like in the Tanakh? There's very little that we can go on about taking thoughts captive and exactly what biblical betrothal looks like in the Scriptures, but we're going to go through a little bit of it here. Job 31:1. This is it's real hard, you know. This is one of the things that, like I said, this is a desire that God has put into us, to desire the opposite, to desire for men to desire women and women to desire men. You know, it's a God-given thing, but as he said, take every thought captive. You know, put a guard on your eyes. And Yeshua also talks about how if your right hand offends, cut it off. And if it takes it, I mean, if it takes always being near your parents and wearing blinders, or not going certain places, or not hanging out with certain people, that's what it takes. because this is eternity we're talking about. And this, as we know, if we don't grab it right at the beginning, it's a spiral. And when it brings forth death. Genesis 39:9. How can I do this great sin against God? When Pharaoh was, Joseph was in Egypt, he had a woman running after him, and it would have been very easy for him to hide this great sin. But when what this talks about is that it's not necessarily a sin against Potiphar. It wasn't a sin against Potiphar. This was a sin against God. So it's very grave. So we have to be very, very careful about, you know, running from situations. Usually, if we have the ability to walk into that situation, God's given us the ability to run out of it. And we just need to remember that, you know, we've got to guard against sinning against God. And Yeshua, Joseph was talking about, you know, running out of the situation. And then Yeshua takes it to an even deeper level when he talks here in Matthew 5:28. He says, "But I say unto you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." That's pretty grave. You know, that's what I'm talking about when it goes down to the heart issue. When, you know, you're in the group and you start becoming friends with someone, and then it becomes more than that. Or when you just look, that's how deep that God wants us to go, and that's how radical we have to be. I know of a congregation and the men, what they'll do is they'll practice bouncing their eyes. They'll look at something and go, and they'll bounce their eyes. So, you know, and that's little tricks like that, you know. And that's not just for men, that's for women too. That's for everyone who has a heart that is transformed and to be for Yeshua. So I think that's very important, the way that Yeshua talks about it, is that we need to and we have to really bear down and, you know, do the hard work. 2 Timothy 2:22. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord with a pure heart. You know, that's what God has given us. He's given us a new heart. He's given us a very tender heart. One of the things that God has done is that He, in His wisdom, has taken us, even after we've sinned, because every one of us was born a sinner. He has taken that, and He might have let us go on in sin for a period of time. He let me off and on sin for many years of my life. And then at the end of that, He said, you know, okay, now flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness. And He's given us that pure heart that He's going to rebuild the cup. I told you that teacup that you drop, the heart that gets broken, that it can never be put back. There's only one person that can, and Yeshua is that person. So He can repair it. He can put it back together. But there's still going to be an ache. There's still going to be pain there. And you're still going to remember that person that you were just friends with. And it's always going to be there until Yeshua remakes you new. 1 Timothy 5:2. Older women like mothers. What does that mean? It's a lot easier for, you know, us to deal with older women like mothers, because, you know, it's and older men like fathers, but it still needs to be, it still has to be that line in the sand that, you know, I'm going to treat her like an honorable mother. I'm going to listen to her, and I'm going to pay attention what she says and the guarding that she gives. And this also goes for, you know, the way that girls treat older men, and younger women like sisters in all purity. Now, especially, we came from a smaller group where everybody was real close. Everybody kind of treated each other like brother and sister. And in fact, I lived with a family for a very long time, and that girl, the girl that was in that family, Abigail, I treated her like a sister. And one of the things that, the only way that we can do this is to put guards in our mind and say, not every woman, not every boy is a potential spouse. It's better to say, as it says in the Word, you know, flee youthful passions, and to stand it and say, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to walk differently. And like I said, Yeshua, He's the one who can rebuild the cup. He can bring our heart new. He can take that dough of our heart and remake it. But He's not going to take all the pain that we have put upon that heart. He's not going to make it 100%. Because part of the way that He molds us is that He takes the pain that we have put upon ourselves and the scratches and the tears that we've done in our garment. He's going to take them, and yeah, He'll let us go through our life with that. And He'll make us show that off. He'll make us show that those ugly things that we've done off, and through that He will glorify His Son. I've been thinking about how there's two ways that Yeshua glorifies His Son. One is He glorifies His Son through evil people, through them being so sinful, and then Him judging them and showing forth His glory in judgment. But the other thing that He does is He shows His mercy. He shows His mercy through the way that He will retake what we have torn up, what we've destroyed, the things that we have, you know, the cup that we've broken, the heart that we've given away, the sin that we've done, the, you know, kneeling before false gods and, you know, putting other things ahead of Him. He takes that and He'll remake it, because He's our Redeemer. He redeems us. I like that. He's our Redeemer. The things that we, like I said, you know, the things that we've destroyed, the things that we have cut and bruised, He's not, as we walk through this life, He's not going to just make it all better. He's going to put oil on it. He's going to wipe away this. He's going to clean the wound out. He's going to heal that. But it's going to take time, because that's how He's decided in His glory as we walk through this earth. I kind of went through it faster than I meant to, because I want to talk about it. I want to kind of talk with y'all about how do we really do this. Because I think when we started walking through this, when I was young, when I was 10 years ago now, as we started walking through it, I thought, well, what about this situation? Well, what about this situation? Well, I've got this guy, and I'm interested in him, but this is kind of, you know, I like the idea of guarding my heart. You know, I've got a grandson, or I've got a son, and, you know, how do I guide him through this? You know, what can we do to reset the clock and say, okay, you know, I've been, you know, throwing dirt on this gift that God is giving me. How do I turn and walk a different way? And that's what I was talking about earlier, about, you know, what are the guidelines? How do we do this? And it has to be through dialogue, and then through, okay, you know, that wasn't a good idea, and let's do it this way, because we don't have the history that we should have. And then after we have done it, we got to get up and say, okay, you know, we don't do it this way. We don't go put our fingers underneath the lawnmower while it's running. We don't do that, you know. So I guess we'll open it up to questions now after we...